Hello again, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. Welcome back to Education Talk Radio. It's Monday, the last Monday in February 2012, and we're coming up to Leap Year Day on Wednesday, February 29th, so enjoy it. But today's the 27th, and I'm thrilled to have with us today Stephanie Harvey, who I'm going to bring on in a second, literacy expert, Heinemann author, et cetera, et cetera. Steph, hold tight for just a second. I want to make sure everybody knows that if they have to leave in the middle of the broadcast today, we're going to archive the show at our website, education-talkradio.org, education-talkradio.org, just as soon as we are finished talking with Stephanie today. And I also want to thank my good friends over at Heinemann Publishing for introducing me to Stephanie. Heinemann's resources for leveled literacy intervention, benchmark assessment, classroom materials, professional books, and professional development services literally transform teaching, and they lead to powerful learning. And that, my friends, is the bottom line. For the best in educational publishing and professional development, please go over and visit Heinemann, H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N.com today, Heinemann.com, to learn more about what's going on, Heinemann with two N's, because Heinemann is dedicated to teachers, and I love when they bring on their terrific, terrific authors like Stephanie Harvey. Hi, Steph. Are you there?
Hey, I'm here, Larry. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, and you're in Denver. I'm in Boston, so thanks a lot for getting up so early today to do the show.
Oh, it's not that early. 8 a.m. It's not that early here, so it's pretty nice. How are you?
Well, that's true. We are all teachers or ex-teachers or whatever, so that is early today, but I still appreciate it, you know?
Exactly. Okay.
All right. And Steph, I just want to give you the introduction you so richly deserve. Stephanie Harvey is an author, a staff developer, a literacy specialist, and also first and foremost, as she writes to me, a teacher. She spent 15 years as an elementary school teacher and as a special ed teacher, so you will go to heaven, right, Steph?
Exactly. Right? I hope so.
I'm sure you're going, the special ed teachers are always have a special place in my heart because I would not be able to do it, and I really appreciate the folks who do it. Steph, I'm going to give you a plug before we go on any further here, okay? I'm on your website, StephanieHarvey.com. StephanieHarvey.com. Stephanie Harvey Consulting. Why don't you just tell us what you do with Stephanie Harvey Consulting before we get into all the stuff about literacy?
Sure. Well, we're a broad-based educational consulting group, and where it involves lots of different things, including I go out and I work in schools across the country and districts across the country and states, and not only across the country, actually internationally, although most of my work is domestic. But I do a lot of international work as well, but most of it's domestic. But then I also have a group of wonderful, mostly in-practice teachers who go out on my behalf, have been trained extensively by me at Stephanie Harvey Consulting, and do work in classroom-based work in staff development across the country and stuff. So we do district-wide literacy initiatives and state initiatives and all sorts, all focused primarily on best practice literacy instruction, reading and writing. So that's what we do.
That's great. And what's your latest book? You know, Heinemann introduced me to you, so let's put a plug over there. What's your latest book?
Okay, great. Okay, so my most recent book is actually a book called Comprehension and Collaboration, Inquiry Circles in Action, that I wrote with my great friend, buddy, and colleague, Smokey Daniels, Harvey Daniels.
He's been on our show.
Okay, so you totally know him. And then I have a resource called the Comprehension Toolkit Series that I have created along with my other partner in crime, Ann Goodfuss, and we continue to expand that, the Comprehension Toolkit, which is a curricular resource that Heinemann has published. And right now we've just come out with a piece for English language learners that's related to the toolkit. So for teachers who are using toolkits and have a lot of English language learners in their classroom, this is a great resource to support them to explicitly teach comprehension to their kids who are not native English speakers. So that's just come out in the last couple of weeks, actually. So
wow. So what's that? Just go over what it's called again.
Scaffolding the Comprehension Toolkit for English Language Learners.
Oh, that's the one that's going to be made into a movie, right?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right.
got the right. Oscars on my mind from last night. You know?
That's right. That's right. I watched them too. So.
Yeah, my wife taught ESL for many years. She loved it. It's really great stuff.
Oh, did
you know?
She? Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, it's exactly. It's if she were still an ESL teacher, that's who this resource is for. It's for anybody or anybody who's got. We, as you know, and it, we've spent a lot of time in the last couple of years, Anne and I, specializing in English language learning because we have such a dramatically increased number of kids who are coming from all over various parts of the world and not
yep.
native speakers. So yeah.
Yep, it's so darn important, and it's so darn important not only for them to learn English, but people don't tend to realize there's a lot of potential out there.
Oh,
okay, and if these kids learn English, because you don't speak English doesn't mean you're stupid. It just means you don't speak English. Okay, and so if you could tap into the potential of all these kids coming from all over the world into our country, into our schools, okay, we're going to be a better country for it.
No doubt about it. No doubt
that was
about
it. I'm whoever, and I approve that message.
Well, I completely concur. So.
It's true. It's true. Now, literacy. Okay, you're an expert on literacy, right, Stephanie Harvey?
Well, you know, I actually take a little bit of issue with the word expert, but not that I don't think that I tend to call myself a specialist more on just about anything related to teaching and learning and literacy, because I get this feeling sometimes that the word expert sometimes it has a bit of a pejorative context, like an expert. Kind of can come off as a know-it-all, whereas I think of a specialist, you know, does that not, you know, I mean, I wouldn't want to, I don't want to listen to experts. I want to listen to people who are really specialists, like in the medical profession, for instance. We
That's
don't
right.
call the...
Very good analogy. Very good analogy.
You know,
I don't
call the
hyper-neurosurgeons. I love that.
Yeah,
that's a good
so, you know, a hyper-neurosurgeon specialist, I like that he's a specialist or she's a specialist because it indicates to me that they are continuing to learn. Whereas
yeah, and it also indicates that they actually are involved in the thing that they're doing, I think.
Absolutely.
Specialist, yeah.
So that's why I call myself a literacy specialist, exactly.
All right, so let me rephrase the question. So, Steph, you're a literacy specialist?
Yeah. I do agree to that one, absolutely.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. All right. So talk to me, okay, when you go into a school or however we're going to phrase this, you start this conversation.
Sure.
Talk to me about what you're teaching teachers about literacy.
Absolutely. Okay, so, well, that's a big question, and of course there are a lot of things. My particular specialty and some of the people that I work with at Stephanie Harvey Consulting and Goodfist, people like that, our particular specialty is comprehension theory and practice, comprehension instruction. And that and although we work in all areas of teaching kids to read and to write, we have a particular specialty in explicitly teaching comprehension. And that in itself is not
a
new idea.
Do me a favor. Do me a favor. I want you to define comprehension. I know everybody knows it, but I want you to define it from exactly
sure.
your point of view.
Good, exactly. So comprehension is not about answering a bunch of literal questions at the end of a chapter or a paragraph or a textbook section. Many of us grew up thinking that was it because that's what the publishers called it, the comprehension section, you know, and they ask these literal questions at the end, right?
Please, how do you think I got through school? Come on, give me a break.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, all of this,
right.
I mean, this is, you know, I was born in 1949, so all I knew of comprehension was were these questions at the end. But what
exactly.
we know now... You know, what we know now is that answering literal questions does not demonstrate understanding. You asked how to define comprehension. For us, comprehension is synonymous with understanding, not just parroting back or spitting out questions at the end, but really, truly understanding the information, whether by the way we read it, hear it, or view it. So it's not just about reading comprehension, and I don't call it reading comprehension. We call it comprehension because we understand in a wide range of modes, you know. And so comprehension, instruction, we don't what comprehension really is it's this ongoing process of evolving thinking. So it's the thinking that occurs while we're reading, listening, or viewing. It's the way our thinking changes, the way our thinking is enhanced, the way it's revised as we're receiving information. So it really is, above all, it's this inner conversation that readers have with text. That, you know, it's this voice. You speak to it's this voice in our heads that speaks to us as we read. So it's really this whole thinking process, not a bunch of literal questions afterwards.
So then now carry that definition of comprehension to how that, okay, helps kids learn and achieve.
good point. Okay, so as one might understand, if, you know, look, there's this guy in your neck of the woods in Boston. His name is David Perkins, and he's at the Harvard School of Education and graduate school at the Ed School, and he also was one of the founders of Project Zero at Harvard, along with Howard Gardner, the famous psychologist. And Perkins says, you know, that knowledge does not just sit there. It functions richly in people's lives so they can learn about and deal with the world. And what we're really trying to do when we teach comprehension, we teach kids to think in the way that I just mentioned, is
right.
In that way, they have a much better shot of turning information into knowledge. See, that's a big piece, is that the difference between information and knowledge. And teachers and kids don't always understand the difference between information and knowledge. And if all we're doing is being blasted with information every day and then just spitting it back out, it's really just garbage in and garbage out, right? But if we take that information in and then we merge it with our thinking, then we have a chance of turning it into knowledge, which sticks and stays and allows us to deal with the world in ways to understand it better. So that's really what we want to do, is help kids turn information into knowledge. And the only way they do that is by thinking about the information. And that's why comprehension, thinking, understanding are so important, because it gives us a shot at turning the information into knowledge and building background knowledge, which is what really makes us more and more educated, isn't it? Having more of a knowledge store.
I well put, and I couldn't agree with you more, for goodness sakes. So you said before that comprehension isn't just, quote, and I'm leading up to something. Of course, we need to learn facts, but it's not just learning facts and spitting them out. Okay?
Yeah.
So talk to me about the role of nonfiction in what you are talking about.
Okay, so in this whole area of comprehension, we have basically a group of strategies, and we use them in informational text reading, literature reading, etc. One of the reasons that we really want to emphasize nonfiction learning with our kids is that the vast majority of what we adults read, what we adults listen to, what we view, what we hear, is nonfiction information.
Wait a minute. Does this mean that Star Trek is not real?
But sorry. If you're a Trekkie, maybe you spend more time with fantasy than nonfiction. But you also probably, if you watch your favorite Star Trek today, you also, archive someplace, you also probably read the Boston Globe, or you were online reading papers.
Thou art correct.
Okay, good. We know about 90% of what publishers publish across all forms is nonfiction. And yet in schools, we usually have in 4th, 5th, 6th grade, et cetera, oftentimes up to 80 or 90% of what kids are reading is fiction, or is chapter book fiction. And so one of the reasons we're big on emphasizing nonfiction is to more closely approximate real-world reading that you're going to do outside of school. But we still want, don't get me wrong, we're big advocates and lovers of literature as well. We just want to get it much more into balance, okay? We just want to have a much better balance, yeah. And nonfiction has gotten short shrift over time, and so we're trying to increase the amount of nonfiction that kids read.
You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, because look at the ratings of PBS and all the documentaries they run versus stuff like Glee, et cetera, et cetera. You're absolutely right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we want to make we just want to really promote, get kids more interested in, and there's so much incredible information out there. And the truth is, with struggling readers, with kids that we have concerns about, I have never found a kid who I can't interest in something in the real world. You know, maybe it's drag racing, maybe it's whatever, spiders, whatever it is, I usually can find something to really fire kids up in the real world. So it's a real advantage for our kids who we have concerns about. The other thing is that it comes with all these built-in supports, all the features, the visual and the text features. So the illustrations of a great National Geographic, I mean the photographs or the graphs, the charts. So one of the interesting things about nonfiction is it actually is the most accessible genre because of all the ways, all the entry points into it besides merely textual entry points. The beautiful photographs, the captions, the illustrations, the charts, the graphs, etc.
Huh.
So we also want to teach kids we want to teach kids to read all those and pay attention to all those features as well as text to enhance their understanding of all the information and therefore increase their comprehension and turn that information into knowledge.
How young can a kid be to start really reading nonfiction?
Oh, that's really such a great question.
Is that a good question?
Well, actually,
yeah.
It's a great question because I'll tell you why. We advocate at the most nonfiction at the earliest ages for the very reason I just told you. So, and particularly with English language learners, because again, think about this. I can go into a kindergarten classroom and they're really interested in the moon. I can bring in a big Time Life coffee table book, open it to the center two-page spread of the moon and you know the craters and all that sort of stuff, and all the text on the side may be too complex even for me to understand, but kids can see what a crater looks like, or they can see a picture of the solar system, and they can see how far Earth is from the sun versus Venus or whatever. So the information that they can get from very early on just from images, and by the way, we're living in a very visually literate world now, increasingly. So the idea that kids that are looking are we're really teaching them to pay attention to images as well as text. So in terms of that kind, nonfiction, and it's really great with our English language learners because they can see what we're talking about as well as read about it, right? So we actually advocate it even more with younger kids, surrounding them in great pictures of insects and spiders and frogs and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I always like to – I think I brought this up once or twice, okay? But I remember I was assigned a science project in seventh grade, and it was about I had to write a little report on the salmon.
On the what?
You know?
I'm sorry.
The fish.
What did
the
you write
salmon.
It on? Okay.
The salmon. Salmon.
Right.
Salmon. Right.
Salmon.
I read in the encyclopedia that the salmon swims upstream to spawn.
Right.
And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Okay, I thought I had misread it, that this fish goes through all this aggravation to go up and spawn, comes back in from the ocean and up the river. And what you're saying there, okay, that kind of started to give me a real interest and understanding.
Absolutely.
Okay, of the real world, so to speak. And I always remember that as a keystone of my really beginning to really comprehend and like science.
See, this is a great example.
This is seventh grade. Yeah.
This is seventh grade, by the way,
in 1960, just so, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But see, it's a great example of what we want to do. We want to bring that down much earlier because we, above all, passion and wonder are contagious. And what happened to you is that that made you curious. And what we want to do is we want to totally celebrate that curiosity in preschool so that kids have more questions as they move up the ladder in education rather than fewer. Too often, kids come bursting into kindergarten brimming with questions and eyes wide. You know, why is the sky blue?
Yeah.
Why do only zebras and tigers have stripes? And by seventh grade, sometimes conventional schooling has knocked the curiosity right out of them. So what we want to do is we want to turn school into a place that builds that curiosity. So a seventh grader like yourself is going, how the heck do salmon do that? That's crazy.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So that's what
I was in seventh, and seventh grade is the new first grade.
You're right about
that. Point of
praise. You are right about that. Yeah.
Let me reintroduce you in case people just tuned in. We're talking to Stephanie Harvey Heineman, author, staff developer, literacy specialist, teacher first and foremost, 15 years as an elementary teacher, and a special ed teacher. As I said, Heineman, author, owner of Stephanie Harvey. Consulting at stephanieharvey.com and go over there and check all her stuff. You can go over to heineman.com and plug her name in and see all the stuff she's done over there. Great stuff. We're talking about literacy, okay, and really literacy and comprehension, okay? You have something, Steph, called the gradual release of responsibility approach.
Yeah, and that is this is an approach that that goes back to actually the original research citation on it was not mine. It's 1983. It's David Pearson and Meg Gallagher, and they're two famous researchers in our field.
Right.
But the gradual release of responsibility is an approach to instruction that we use across all the instruction that we teach our teachers to use. And what it entails is it goes along with what we've been talking about, Larry, which is rather than just giving kids questions and having spit them out, telling kids what to do, gradual release ensures that teachers model their thinking, show kids how they do things themselves. So we literally open up our minds to show kids how we make sense when we read, how we ask questions, how we draw inferences. You see, so we show them that and like do what we call think alouds, where we literally think out loud as we read and show the kids this is how we are comprehending this. This is the inner conversation we're having with this author. And we take that public to our children and to other teachers who are also trying to provide the kind of instruction we're talking about. Then we give kids time to practice on their own that strategy. We give them time to think and practice, as opposed to just turn a worksheet in. We give them time to practice the strategy themselves, both collaboratively, independently, and finally, if we've shown kids how well, and if they've really had time to practice, they tend to have learned what we want them to learn, and that's really our goal, isn't it? So gradual release has a lot to do with that question you asked about learning and achievement, making sure that we give time to kids time to practice and show them how we do things rather than simply tell them. And
Good idea.
And I probably grew up with teachers primarily, even though we may have loved them, that told us what to do. Because that's the way that went when we were younger. But now we really know that showing kids how is really central to their learning how to do something.
Oh, without question. Put all this, Stephanie Harvey, put all this into the Common Core.
Okay, sure.
I don't have to tell anybody what that is, so just talk about Common Core and what you're thinking.
I was going to say everybody knows about that.
Yeah, everybody knows.
Common Core
standards,
sure. So, well, that's a really interesting question because, you see, one of the things we have to understand is about Common Core, about standards generally, but certainly now that Common Core has overtaken almost most states in the country, is that you don't teach the standard. You teach kids a process to meet a standard. So that's the first thing that sometimes there's a misunderstanding. So we can see a standard very clearly, you know, such as distinguishing, I'm looking at fourth grade standard determining the meaning of general academic and domain-specific words or phrases in a text relevant to grade 4. That's a classic standard. Now, it's not – you just don't teach kids that standard. You teach them how do you determine the meaning. So the thinking strategies that we advocate, which there are about six strategies in comprehension that people that the research began to isolate in the 80s and 90s, and those include activating and connecting to background knowledge, drawing inferences, asking questions, determining importance, summarizing and synthesizing, visualizing. These are the strategies that the research is pretty clear about, that if all kids can do and teachers explicitly teach through gradual release, that kids will understand what they read, most importantly, but also be able to meet these Common Core standards. In other words, they're the means to getting there. So what we're trying to do is get kids to meet or exceed the standards. In order to do that, they have to ask questions as they're reading, and they have to stop and think about what they already know. They have to draw inferences. They have to be able to pull the information together, the details together, to come up with the big idea, to meet this standard that asks them to find the main ideas and issues. You know, so that's really, for us, this Common Core thing, we really are very happy to see more rigorous standards. They're not perfect, don't get me wrong, and we could have spent an hour on a discussion around Common Core.
Absolutely.
But they are more thoughtful, and what we believe, and when I say we, I'm talking about many people I work with at Stephanie Harvey Consulting, et cetera, is that these strategies I just mentioned, these thinking strategies, give kids a much better shot at meeting these higher level standards. When a standard is only to answer a question at the end, you didn't really have to think much. So these really raise the bar, and these strategies become increasingly more important, these comprehension strategies that we've been talking about. So that really is key for us. Another thing about this work is that, as you might have noticed, Common Core standards are advocating about 65% of what kids read be nonfiction, even up to 70% in high school, 60 to 70%. So as advocates of nonfiction reading, I think we can really help teachers think about how you get more nonfiction in, particularly in these demands of Common Core state standards, which are expecting far more informational text reading from their kids from early on all the way through high school.
It's a lot of stuff, Steph. You know, or, oh. I mean, that sounds as silly as it sounds. It's really well thought out and good stuff. Where when you go into a school district as part of Stephanie Harvey Consulting,
right?
Okay, do you go in called in usually by a literacy specialist, by the ESL? Who usually gets in touch with you?
Good question. Well,
that's why they pay me the big bucks, Steph.
Exactly. Well, for instance, we do these district-wide literacy initiatives. So, for instance, we're in our third year when Stephanie Harvey Consulting is at a district called West Allis, West Milwaukee Schools in just on the west side of Milwaukee. Yeah. So we're in West Allis, West Milwaukee. So I have three wonderful consultants who work with me, who have worked now over 3 years in trying to revise and refine literacy practice in that district. And these consultants go in on a regular basis and go right into classrooms and work with kids. They're in front of teachers. I do quite a bit of that too, but in West Allis, I actually more supervise this project. But it's a three-year initiative. We've seen some remarkable.
That's great.
Remarkable results, and we've seen, but it's long and systemic. Other ways that we go in is we go in and we spend a short, a day or two here or there, but these long-range ones work better. And most importantly, these districts purchase our Comprehension Toolkit series, which gives them some curriculum
right.
and resource to use, Yeah. So,
and who published
so, yeah,
that? Who published that?
Heinemann publishes that, of course.
Oh, my God, can you believe it? Imagine that.
Surprise, yeah. And they've been very, very supportive. This has been a great resource for us, and it's very extensive. And people can go to comprehensiontoolkit.com as well as Heinemann.com and read all about everything that's involved in that. And that's a Heinemann website, but it's its own Comprehension Toolkit website. Yeah.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. That was great. I didn't have that information anywhere. All right, you got one minute for last words, Miss Stephanie Harvey.
Oh, boy. Okay, well.
Not last words in your life,
really
last words
book.
For the show. Yeah.
I'll tell you what it is. This is what I'm thinking. I used to say our most important role was to teach kids to think. And then I read an article which said, from a very famous theorist named Arthur Costa, which said you can't teach kids to think. And I literally feel like I have a permanent dent in the middle of my forehead because I've been stressing that for 20 years. But then as I read Dr. Costa's article, I began to understand what he was saying. And basically, kids pop out of the womb thinking. Human beings, it's in their DNA to think in the same way it is to eat, to survive, to flourish. It's in our DNA to think. So it's not what we really teach kids to think, but I think we really do need to do these three things. We need to teach our students to, first of all, be aware of their thinking, to recognize that they should be thinking while they're reading, while they're listening and viewing. Then, secondly, we need to teach them to think strategically, whether it's on the playground, making decisions about, whether to get into this scuffle or not, or whether it's in any text they read. And finally, and far most importantly, we need to teach them to recognize the power of their own thinking. Nothing will matter more for them than to recognize how powerful they alone can change their circumstance, their world, their direction, just with what exists right between the ears, and that they have this great power to think about things, turn information into knowledge, and really go places. And I think that's why I'm proud of the work we do, is because we focus so much on teaching kids to think strategically, to understand, to turn information into knowledge.
Well put, Miss Stephanie Harvey. Thanks, Steph. I appreciate it. Well, you were wonderful.
It was great talking with you, Larry. Thanks a lot.
You're the best.
You have a great show, and we really appreciate it. It serves a magnificent purpose, and we educators really appreciate it.
What a sweetie, and thank you so much for saying that, Steph. You take care. We'll have you back on one of these days.
Yeah, I'll come back. Take care.
I love it.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Steph. Stephanie Harvey. She's good or what? Thank you, Heinemann. That was great. Whew. Stephanie, just so you know, is a Heinemann author, staff developer, literary specialist, teacher first and foremost, owner of Stephanie Harvey Consulting, stephanieharvey.com. You can learn more about what she does also over at heinemann.com. She's got incredible stuff out there about comprehension and literacy and thinking. Stephanie Harvey, she's just great. Thank you, Heinemann, for allowing me to interview her and introducing me to her, Heinemann's resources for leveled literacy intervention and benchmark assessment and classroom materials and professional books and professional development services literally transform teaching, and they lead to powerful learning, as you just heard. Please go over Heinemann, H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N, H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N, Heinemann.com. They are dedicated to teachers, and teachers are dedicated to education, and we are Education Talk Radio. And we're going to archive this show over at education-talkradio.org in just a few minutes. Thanks, Steph, and thanks, Chuck, over at Heinemann. We'll be back with you tomorrow. We've got the National School Public Relations Association. We have a wonderful show on bullying, peer harassment, et cetera, what they're doing in the Tulsa Public School. It's going to be just a great show. Check our schedule, education-talkradio.org. This is Larry Jacobs. Have a great day, and we will talk to you again very, very soon.